Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider, brought to you, just for a change, by Vanishing Ink. My guest today is a genuine legend. He's one of the greatest, most prolific creators of card magic tricks the world has ever known. From standalone releases like Twisted Sisters to his huge array of books, DVDs and downloads. If you want strong, commercial card magic, John Bannon is your man. John, thanks so much for agreeing to do this. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for asking me to come. And thanks for that introduction. I would have come just for that introduction, actually.
What's your magic origin story? You've got 32 seconds. And you're using 5 liters of sipping water.
Sorry. Origin story, same as any boy, you know. All boys get involved in magic. Most of them stop. I did not. So there you go.
There we go.
I mean, it is kind of true. So,
yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfectly acceptable response. Do you think that your day job in law has actually helped your creative journey? Because you've not made your living as a performer. So do you think that's helped or hindered you in your magical journey?
That's an interesting question. Well, I mean, I don't think I would ever want to be a professional magician just because it seems too hard for me, you know. Not that law was easy, but I tried to keep the two separate. So I guess to the extent I was a litigator, right? So I was on my feet a lot in court, and that helped me sort of in my presentations, which I don't do because I'm not a professional, if that makes sense. So it probably would have helped. I mean, it did absolutely helped me with my performing ability, but I don't do a whole lot of that. So
now I was wondering whether the not having to think about it all day long, not being pressured to bring out a release because that's what you need to do to pay the mortgage, or indeed your creativity and your prolific amount of material that you've released, whether the fact that you turned off for 9, 10 whatever hours a day to go and be a litigator gave mm-hmm. you the space in your mind for that magical creativity. Do you know what I mean?
I do. First of all, I would not like to have to create sort of on a schedule or for necessity, right? That just seems that it would result in a lot of bad magic, if you ask me. But my day job keeps me busy, and it makes sort of the time that I'm not working kind of precious, right? And
sure. And
you look forward to having that time to, you know, check things out and think about things and doing all that kind of stuff. So, and I never mix the two. I mean, I know there are lawyers out there who like to do tricks in the courtroom. I would never do that. And it's risky, right? I mean,
yeah,
but anyway.
I can imagine. What's your definition of a clear magic effect? And why do you think that's an important goal to have?
Okay, that's very interesting, because I'm not sure that you need a clear magic effect is sort of a vague term on its own. As long as the trick eventually becomes clear, then that's okay. And a lot of the things that I do, I don't tell them what's going on until we get there. You know, so there's a lot of you travel a bit before you understand what the effect is. And I think those can be just as clear, right? I mean, because the goal is, I guess, when it's over, can they tell you what just happened, right?
Right.
That would be the goal. And as far as what works and what doesn't, I think it's very important to be critical of magic generally, so that you know what you like and what you don't like, and why you like it and why you don't like it, and that helps formulate what you would think is a good trick on your own, right? Because all of that influence comes to bear on tricks that I come up with on my own. I go, well, is this good, or I don't like this part, and stuff like that. And that's sort of the creative process, I think. And but it all sort of starts in it with being critical and understanding what you think makes a good trick and what doesn't, right? And I'm sorry to be so vague about that, but you'd have to, you know, it's on a trick basis, right? So, and I just think that's, even if you're not someone who sits around and thinks about card tricks, I think it's really important for people in this hobby or profession to do that, right? I mean, I think you should be able to look at a trick and articulate, yeah, that's good, I'm not crazy about that, and here's why, you know? Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I think it might be difficult for beginners to have the, I don't know, the vocabulary to do that, to say, to understand what makes it good or what makes it bad. Is there way that we could, you could help explain that process?
Yeah.
Is it just personal? Is it just subjective? I like it, I don't like it.
Well, that's good enough, right? I mean, if you're the one that's going to perform the trick, that is good enough. But it's important to come to that conclusion. And beginners are beginners because they don't have the vocabulary, right? Once you get the experience, once you've read enough books, once you've hung out with a lot, you know, if you have a mentor or something, you begin to understand things better. And I think, you know, I am often suspect of very young people creating magic tricks because they probably don't have as full of vocabulary, as you put it, that they probably should. And then so basically it's whether they get lucky or not, right?
Sure.
So that's the process. Sure. The process is doing enough of this stuff, reading enough stuff, doing enough stuff to understand what it is that you like and what you don't like and what works and what doesn't work. Because that...
And being able to then articulate it, as you said.
Yeah, at least to yourself, right? So, yeah.
You've created some of the best self-working effects on the market, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on why you've leaned heavily into that style of effect and what you think about some magicians measuring their worth by their sleight of hand skills only.
Yeah, without, you know, being too critical, a lot of the heavy sleight of hand is pretty obvious to me. I mean, it's obvious to me, obviously, because I know about it, but I mean, it looks obvious. It just, but that aside, I do moves. I don't only do self-working magic, but there's a certain,
Of course.
Yeah. There's a certain elegance to the principles behind self-working magic, I think. And that's what interests me, is how do you take these principles and make a trick out of it? And what you end up with, if you're lucky or if you're good or, you know, whatever, is a trick that, you know, audiences can't see you doing anything, right? Which is sort of the what you're aiming for in a magic trick, but they can't see you doing anything because you're not doing anything, right? The trick has been pre-planned. I mean, all the engineering has been done before you start the trick, as opposed to during. And to me, that's a very, very interesting thing. And I guess as I get older, it's more of a necessary thing. Right?
talking of getting older, what drives you to keep creating?
Well, you know, that's always what I've liked to do, right? It's and creating is sort of not as mystical as of a term as you would think. It's putting things to, it's more engineering than it is art, I think. And a lot of that, you know, has to do with what you like and what you know, and combining things in a way that work with a certain goal in mind. I mean, there's lots of different ways to come at a trick. You could take a trick that you kind of like, but there's problems with it and fix those problems. Or you can take an effect and try to start from scratch or somewhere in the middle there. And but it's all fun. I mean, that's a lot of what I do is think about card tricks and how to, you know, make them work. And that's the hobby. The main hobby for me is that, right? Is, sure. And, you know, I have been lucky that a lot of my tricks have been well received in the hobby or in the marketplace. And I do appreciate that. And so I'm just keep going, right? It's what I do.
It's fun. Wonderful. Wonderful. Feel free to rant. What's wrong with magic today? What do you think's wrong with magic?
Wrong.
What would you do to fix it?
Well, you know, the internet has had a huge impact on magic today, even as a hobby. Okay. And the problem with that is in the old days, in the old days, if you had a trick or a book or whatever, and you wanted to bring it to market, someone else had to make that decision, not you, which means there were filters involved, right? With the internet, there are no filters, right? So anybody who uploads anything is on the same sort of ground as someone who's doing it because they think they have a really good trick, right? And so the result there, and the other thing with the internet is the globalization of magic. Now, that's not a bad thing, but it does sort of increase the total amount of tricks, which means it increases the total amount of bad tricks. But it also increases the total amount of good tricks. You know what I mean? And so it's not a curse. It's just the dynamic has changed, right? It means you need more critical facilities to sort of separate that wheat from the chaff, I think.
Wheat. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So conversely, and this could well be the same answer, what do you think's right in magic today?
Well, you know, magic will separate the hobby from the business, right? Because the magic business has always been a strange business of selling secrets, right? And so how do you do that? Sure. And how do you do that in an ethical way? And we probably shouldn't talk about that too much, given the forum, right? But the hobby is, on the hobby side, there's a ton of stuff out there, right? And access is much easier than it was when I was a kid, right? Or when I was younger. And now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing if you have an idea of what's good. It's not a good thing if you don't, right? And it brings us back to that whole critical thing. And so there's a lot of bad magic out there, as I'm sure you know, right? And at least in my opinion, and I could, like, for any totally. Any given trick, I can tell you exactly why I think it's, you know, good or bad or whatever. But overall, more is more. Information wants to be free, right? And so, and the internet makes that happen. So the result is there's more out there, and the issue is how do you decide, right? So
talking about there being so much stuff up there, beautiful segue to the next question. a kid comes up to you at a convention and says they've seen your videos, they love your magic, but they can only afford one of the multitude of books, downloads, DVDs, and standalone effects you've released. What would you tell them to buy?
Okay, that is an unfair question. That's like asking someone who their favorite child is, right? And I don't, you know, if they're interested in my stuff, you know, any place is a good place to start. I would, if they were a beginner, I would refer them to the Move Zero series, right? Generally, if I am tell if someone's interested in magic, I'm going to refer them to something other than my stuff to start with. So,
Okay. So then, with this thing about curation and too much stuff out on the market, what books do you think everybody interested in card magic should have on their shelves? Give me a few that you think are must-haves.
The older one for card magic, I always recommend Roberto Jovi's Card College
Card
Lite,
College.
not the Card College, no, because that's the wrong way to go, because that's going to start you off with sleight of hand, and you need to have I mean, we all, and that's what happened to us when we were younger, is like the books get into the sleight of hand way sooner than they should. And so the Card College Lite, Late, Later, and Lightest, the really good introduction, because the tricks are good, and Roberto puts them in context in a way that I think is valid, and I think it's the best place to start. And then after that, and this may be controversial, but after that, I would tell them to watch Michael Ammar's video series, Easy to Master Card Tricks. Because he's captured all the best card tricks of the last 50 years are on there somewhere, and but you need a grounding. I think you need to be able to stand up and do a trick for somebody. And Card College Lite will give you the background that you need, I think, to pursue it farther without killing you, right? I mean, because when I was a kid, reading a book about the turnover pass, I would have no idea whether I was doing it right or not, right? So why start there,
And
you
it
know?
was expert card technique or raw road if you were lucky.
Yeah, right. Or the Bruce Elliott books. That's where I come from, Bruce Elliott. Yeah. So
Tricky stuff.
that is where I would send people first and second. And then after that, then you have an idea of what you like. Do you like certain kinds of card tricks or other kinds of card tricks? And then it could be a more focused sort of inquiry, as opposed to a more what's, here I am, teach me card magic kind of thing. So, yeah.
Who are some greats from the past that you never got the chance to see work, but would have loved to have seen work?
Ah, that's a great question. I have seen or met most of my heroes, okay? I have. I've been fortunate, right? The one guy I did not get a chance to meet is Roy Walton, and I wish I had had that opportunity. I had a chance to meet Vernon, and I had a chance to meet like Frank Garcia and Larry Jennings and all of those people. And I'm very happy about that. Not that I hung out with them or were good friends, but I did get to meet them and talk to them. But Roy Walton was the elusive one for me. It's funny. I was
You've
going to do a lecture. I was doing a lecture in Edinburgh, right? And so I am in Scotland. I'm going to do a lecture. Roy Walton is on vacation in New York City. So there was just no opportunity there. And so that was
What a shame.
I know, I know.
So with these meeting your heroes, you were also part of quite some amazing regular sessions, as I understand it. Tell us about the Saturday session. Who attended? What happened? Paint a picture of what was going on with you, Simon Aronson, David Solomon, and the rest of the gang.
Okay, well, there wasn't the rest of the gang, okay? It was Simon and Dave, Solomon and me. We were it. Until maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, a fourth member joined, a guy named David Finkelstein. And it's funny, having it happen every single Saturday was actually a very good thing for me, because if I had something to show, I could show it. And if I didn't have anything to show, somebody else would. Right. And if nobody had it, we would just talk about other magicians and, that kind of thing. And it was the regularity of the session that made it so valuable to me. And then plus, Simon and Dave and me and David have very different ways of approaching card tricks. It was generally card tricks of approaching card magic. And the synthesis, or it probably wasn't even a synthesis, just throwing all those different ways on the table was very valuable and enlightening in ways, gives you, because of the different perspectives.
Sure.
And so, okay, sure. So typically we would go have lunch together somewhere in the neighborhood and talk about current events, current magic events, talk about other magicians, a little gossip kind of things. And then we go back to Simon's house, have coffee, and do card tricks for the rest of the afternoon. And obviously not with Simon anymore, which is a shame, but we still continue to do it during the current unpleasantness over Zoom. So, John Rockerbomber has now joined the group. So, still going on. So for me, it has to be pushing 30
people,
years.
Are you coming up with a problem and challenging people? Is it collaborative, or is it, this is what I've got, and then you get feedback from people? What's the dynamic?
It's more the latter. You are doing something that you think is worth doing, and they're telling you why it isn't.
How harshly are they telling you this?
Well, I mean, it varies, but in the spirit of, we were all friends and we've been friends for a long time. Sharp criticism was okay, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You didn't get to where you need to get to quicker.
Right. You didn't need to be all that diplomatic. But, every one of us has blind spots, right, where we think something's great and it's not, but we don't see it, right? And so a session like that with so many different viewpoints really, really helps that problem, right? Where as if you were not involved with other magicians and you were just sitting around making up card tricks, and there are quite a few people who do that, you don't have the advantage of someone correcting or pointing out your blind spots. And
right.
So I would never, especially in the old days, I would never consider a trick complete unless I showed it to the guys and heard what they had to say. Which is not to say I would always listen to what they had to say or do what they suggested. But at least I had the input there, And that was an important part of the process for me. And it still is,
Yeah, I think so that feedback loop, I guess, is something you would recommend for magicians to have, that trusted friends that can, that you can,
I do.
You can be.
I mean, everybody needs someone to be bad in front of, right? to be half baked, and so that's there. And then people bring valuable experience and approaches to the session table. I mean, the only other alternative would just to be go out and perform it for a bunch of people a lot of times and learn the hard way, right? This helps shortcut that process somewhat. I mean, you still need to perform it, obviously. Magic is a performing art, but it helps you get there quicker, I guess, and in a more structured way.
Yeah. So why do you think people sometimes struggle or fear being creative, the thing that you are obviously hugely known for? Why do you think people have a problem with that?
Well, honestly, I think there's too large a premium on being creative. And let me explain what I mean. These days, especially, there's pressure on people to take a trick and then make it their own, right? And that's generally not a bad thing. And I hope I'm saying this right. But if you change something just to make it original with you, that's not necessarily a good thing. Right? Because, you know, the trick is put together in a certain way and certain things have to be done in a certain way, and changing them may not make it better. Right? And here, the example that I like to use and is this. I have this trick where you produce an eight ball from a card box. Right? And it's a good trick. It's a trick I'm known for. Right? And I have had people come up to me and say, you know, I really like that trick. I do it all the time, except I do it with a three ball instead. Because I think they feel obligated to change it, right? When the whole point is that it's an eight ball. Eight balls are funny. Three balls are not, you know? But that's the example. It's like you don't need to be that kind of creative, right? But unfortunately, I think there is sort of pressure out there to do those kinds of things, and that's a whole nother discussion of, you know, what works of persona and what works kind of thing, you know. So does that answer
you
your question?
So you hereby give carte blanche to anybody. It does. So you hereby give carte blanche to everybody to do it with an actual eight ball.
Yes, see, that's the thing. Remember, I said you need to be critical about things. The reason why the trick is a good trick is because it's an eight ball, right? If you produced a baseball, well, maybe, but it's not immediate. I mean, then you need context. With an eight ball, you don't need context, right? And so, I guess that's where I'm at on that one.
Absolutely. How do you determine when to stop working on a trick? In other words, if you push an idea as far as you can, how do you know when you're satisfied with it or whether it's worthy to be in print or on a download or whatever?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's the standard aphorism that most magicians stop thinking too soon. And you're asking exactly the opposite question. It's like, how do you know that you've reached the end of the journey, right? And, you know, it's a soft end. It's always a soft end because later on, after you may come up with other additions or changes to the trick. But there is an ending point where you go, okay, this is done. This is how I will do it. And there's nothing else to be done here. And then again, you have to bring your own critical facilities to it to determine whether or not it's a good trick or not. I mean, along the way, you're trying to make it the best trick that you can, but at the end of the day, is it a good trick or not? You know, and that's
okay. So you've done, is it a good trick? But how do you know when you're done? How do you know?
Well, again, you kind of just do, right? I mean, you want
right.
to, I know, you know, like I said, we all have blind spots. So I like to show the tricks to fellow magicians, friends of mine. I like to, depending on the trick, show it to lay people to make sure that certain things are working the way I want it to do. But, you know, while I don't do a lot of performing, I've done enough. So I kind of have a sense of how tricks play. And so, yeah, it's just a decision that you make, right?
Okay.
But it's always good.
I think you just do is perfectly valid.
Yeah. So it's good if other people agree with you, you know, if you show
Absolutely.
if you show it to somebody and they go, oh, yeah, that's a pretty good trick. Well, good. Yeah.
John Bannon, we are out of time, but we always end the show with four quick-fire questions.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. I should have looked
Favorite
these up.
Favorite pizza topping?
Anchovies.
Favorite movie?
Dirty Harry.
favorite person or people that make music?
The Clash.
And finally, who would you rather fight? One massive Joshua Jay or 100 tiny Andy Gladwins?
Oh, wow. I think I could take Josh in a fair fight, even though he's a big guy.
Okay.
But 1,000 tiny Andy Gladwins is like death by 1,000 cuts, right? Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to do that. So
you go for big Josh. Cool. John Bannon, thank you so much for giving us your time. I really appreciate it. And that was a genuine pleasure, man. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. So
boom. Thank you very much.
Does that work for you?